One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to part two, hour two of the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, where every day we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And I get the pleasure of curating that conversation. I'm Zach Yenser, your host on this daily Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, opportunity for community conversation around the issues and themes that have the greatest impact on Tucson's future. And we have a great lineup for you today. If you missed hour one of the show, that was with Lindsay Welch, the president of the Emerging Leaders Council, a mentorship and professional development council out of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. And we talked about mentorship. We talked about the issues and topics that are most on young professionals' mind, both in terms of the things that we're doing well as a city, but also things that we need to either make sure we continue doing right or that we need to really make sure we get right ASAP to retain young professionals, 20 to 45 roughly, in Tucson. So that was a good conversation. If you missed any of it, you can go to kvuy.com/podcasts, give it about 24 hours or so, check back tomorrow morning, and you can find the full replay of that interview on iTunes, Google Play Music, or on kvuy.com/podcasts. But now in our 11 o'clock hour, we continue with more people and ideas shaping Tucson's future with Danny Nee in studio, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. And I am looking forward to this conversation because it's not our first on this show. We've done this before. We had such a good time. We are doing it again. We'll continue doing it again. But you guys are up to some really great things in the community and a lot of things that I'm hearing out and about that are challenges to many of our neighbors and neighborhoods and businesses and individuals trying to get into housing. You guys are working on already, to your credit. We just need to be messaging that more. We were talking about that before we got in. Danny Nee, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me again, Zach. I really appreciate it. Appreciate any opportunity to talk about the work that not only that we're doing, but that the nonprofit community in general is doing here in Tucson.
Absolutely. And you guys are a really collaborative organization as well, which is great because we need more of that.
We try to be. It's interesting. There was a New York Times opinion article, David Brooks, who's a moderate conservative out there, and he was talking about collective efforts that are being done up in Canada to deal with poverty and those types of things. And I only mention it because it was something I actually, I immediately sent out to my staff and said, you know, this is why we collaborate. This is, collaboration is not a zero sum game. It's something where, you know, when we work together, I think we do make a greater impact. We can't always be focused on just what's in it for our individual, organization, at the moment, but what collectively is going to make our community better.
Right. And from a community perspective, I certainly hope that this continues. I'm an optimist. I believe in the people of this community. I believe in this community. But I'm also aware that collaboration is just easier when the economy's good. Let's be real. And that's not a put down or a statement about anybody in particular. It's just easier to collaborate when the pie seems bigger. It's when things are tough and we need to collaborate the most that often we pull back and go, you know, it's mine, about my four and no more. And I certainly hope that as our economy, you know, what's good now, it's going to dip at some point, it always does, and come back up again. I just hope that the collaboration that we see in our community now, and it's really happening at a high level, continues through the good and the bad, because we need it in the bad even more than we need it in the good.
Absolutely. I think it's an insightful thought. Collaboration is more difficult at times when we're worried about our own resources. You know, and resources are more plentiful, but at the same time, it's still something where I think in our business where we're at, we're trying to generate more interest in the things that we're doing. What I would say, and I probably told you the last time I was here, we have limited resources. We are a lender. We're an alternative lender. We lend to people. One of our programs, we lend to people that otherwise can't get a loan from traditional banks, credit unions. And one of the issues is, even if I ran the most successful program ever, I only have about $2 million to lend out. And I always joke that, you know, that's a banker's, that's like a good day, maybe, you know, a week for somebody. We would run out of resources very quickly. And our approach is to try to bring people into our market space, to bring others to interest them in the investment, the types of investments that we're making. We're not here to do it only. We want more money to be more available to more people. That's
right.
And the only way you do that is, and it's great to work where I work because we get to experiment a little bit on new programs, new approaches, and then go out, collaborate, try to bring other people to the table to do similar things. We do not want the market share because we don't have the resources for it. We would prefer, and I'm a big believer in the marketplace, that the marketplace can provide as long as we can overcome some of their hesitation and some of the risks involved in activities that nonprofits are involved in.
Great. Well, I love that. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to this conversation. Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. We want to talk today about Pima Industrial Development Authority's Mortgage Credit Certificate Program. Ugh, it's a lot of it's a lot of words, which will reduce the cost of first-time home ownership for Tucson and Pima County residents. And then you're also a part, you were shouted out in a nationally published article about Tucson's budding business startup ecosystem and culture. And we spent our first hour together on this show back a couple of months ago talking really about the nuts and bolts of what you do. And I wanted to take this opportunity and zoom in on a couple of them in particular. But just in way of introduction before we get going, can you talk about the three or four things that you guys really do and focus on a day-to-day at the Community Investment Corporation?
Sure. So we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We leverage our capital and capacity to enhance employment opportunities in Southern Arizona and to help small businesses and nonprofit organizations thrive and succeed. We were founded as a support organization for the Pima Industrial Development Authority. The three program areas in which we work are home ownership. We do bond compliance, and that's in support of the bond deals that the Pima Industrial Development Authority does, and we help with compliance on the back end of those deals. And then we have a small business lending program. And right now we are focusing more on micro lending than we have in the past. We're trying to really work on that space.
And it was such a missing element for so long in Tucson, in my mind.
And I think
not to interrupt, but
no,
like,
I think it's a missing element in a lot of places. There are economic reasons for that. We understand that. Banks can't make money off of it. It's hard in a for-profit approach to make a lot of money off of microlending. Yet, I think for economic development, for the good of communities, the idea of having small amounts of money available to budding entrepreneurs is incredibly important. Innovation, you know, doesn't come to just those who need $1 million. Some of the, you know, the best ideas and even some of the largest businesses now were started with a $1,000 loan from family and friends.
That's right.
And so I just think that we need to keep our eye on that prize at the same time that we're doing that macroeconomic development. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both and. So we can look for large employers, look to recruit large employers to town. We can talk about the brain drain from the U of A. How do we keep people here? You were talking about last hour. And yet there's also that part of where we start from the community. So even with the brain drain, that idea of opportunities to people who grew up here, get them started in, you know, high school, and the idea of having a business, having a vibrant startup culture here in town. And I think that's a way both to keep people here, have them come back if they go off somewhere else to college, potentially come back, and also to keep people that come to the University of Arizona. More and more these days, and I say millennials, it's funny to do these generational things. I remember when people were calling me Gen X back in the day. And
you're still Gen X. That's how it works. But.
But I'm lumping this whole group of people as if if they're monolithic.
Right.
But the idea being that if there's a vibrant startup community, there are a lot of young people who may see this as a low cost area to start businesses. I think that's great. I think we need to highlight that and to provide the ecosystem and the support for individuals and entrepreneurs who want to do that.
Super. So the micro lending, home buyer assistance, anything else?
Just the bond compliance is the other one. That's the more technical one. It's not real sexy. So I don't get into that as much. I would put your listeners to sleep pretty quickly, I think.
Okay, well, let's talk about the sexy things today.
Okay, that sounds great.
Danny Nee, executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. So let me kick it off by this way and see how much we can get through before we spin away to a break here. I was sharing with you, and I by no means know everything, or sometimes I feel like I know anything, but as a campaign season is kicking off and has been kicking off for a while in the city, one of the big topics that has been going on is housing, both at an affordability level, at a getting into it level, staying into it level. And I've been really fascinated by even candidates who will be talking about this issue, talk about solutions that in many cases do exist already, that maybe it isn't talked about enough. So for example, and this is what we're going to talk about, is the mortgage credit certificate. It's that it helps homebuyers finance their first home purchase. There are resources that even I think Summit Funding was a part of, where you can basically loop in renovation costs of the home you want to buy into your mortgage through existing federal funds, right? So if you want to buy a $190,000 home, and but you look at it and go, I just can't afford $60,000 in renovation costs. There are ways that as a first-time home buyer or any home buyer, you can buy that home. Whereas if you let it just be renovated by someone who's flipping a home, which is our free market capitalism right to do as well, you're not going to be able to get into that home for $190,000 once it's done being flipped. You're going to get into it for $250,000, $270,000, some parts of Tucson, $330,000, $350,000, sure, which is just unattainable and creates a lot of the challenges that we are seeing in the community. I did not mean to rabbit trail that far, Danny Nee, Executive Director of Community Investment Corporation, because that's what you're here to talk about. My point being is that you work on these issues every day. Some of these solutions are here. So tell me about the Mortgage Credit Certificate Program and kind of the IDA collaboration that it's part of.
Sure. So the Mortgage Credit Certificate, it's basically a tax credit that's given through the Internal Revenue Service. And local jurisdictions can apply for funding for it, those tax credits. The Pima Industrial Development Authority applies for it here in Pima County. We then administer that program for them. What it is it's a dollar-for-dollar tax credit that's given to first-time home buyers. It's up to 40% of their mortgage interest in a year, up to $2,000. So there's a lot of things. It's there are different requirements for it, which we can go through. But it's really for first-time home buyers, and that's defined as somebody who hasn't owned a home in the last 3 years.
Oh, interesting. So they may have bought a home before, but not in the last 3 years.
That's right. They can't have had ownership in a home in the last 3 years. There are some exceptions sometimes in divorces, for instance, where somebody may have owned a home but is now getting divorced. There are some exceptions to the 3 year rule. In this case, it is not just for low-income people, but really low and moderate-income people. We recently got an increase on the program's parameters. So the maximum income that you could have in a non-target area is $78,000 for a family of three or more. It's a little bit lower, about 60, $8,000 for a household of two or fewer. And you can buy a home up to, if it's a one unit home, it can be up to $283,000. If it's two units, it can be up to $362,000. That's in a non-target area. In a target area, it's going to be a little bit higher than that. And the idea, target areas are basically places that are in need of a little more redevelopment. And so that's how they're highlighted. It would be impossible to go over all of them. There's a map on on our website.
Which is?
Our website is www.cictucson.com or .org, either one.
Super easy. Felt like a good time to plug that.
That's okay. I appreciate that. But I think what's interesting about this program is it's used in two ways. It can help to families to qualify. It can be the tax credit, depending on the lender you're with, may include it as income. So it could help you to qualify for a loan that you may not otherwise be able to qualify for. And then the other piece of it is it will save you up to roughly about $50,000 over the life of your loan. So if you imagine a lower moderate income person being in a home, that idea of, you know, saving, so every year at tax time, you get $2,000 off your you get $2,000 off of your tax bill. You, over the life of the loan, you're going to wind up 30 years. If you were to stay for 30 years, not many people do these days, but you could save $50,000 over that time period. So that's wealth building, something that we talk about. I think it's one of the things that I always find difficult. It's maybe, you know, personally, I find difficult that in our society, the people who need the most opportunity at wealth building have the least opportunity for it. There are economic, financial reasons that deal with risk and all sorts of things why they can't. I think we understand that, but for those who, you know, rail against subsidizing or helping in these areas, the issue is people can actually really help themselves if we provide opportunities like this to get into ownership, for instance. That idea of taking money each month and paying it towards a mortgage and really building wealth for your own family versus paying rent to somebody else. And there's nothing wrong with the rental market. That's not here. That's not what I'm here to rail against. It's the idea that we need to find more opportunities for people to participate in our economy, the economy that works for so many, but also leaves a wide swath of people out. And that's what a program like the mortgage credit certificate, I think, does. Somebody who's buying buying a home, they have this investment, and we're going to help them, and we want to encourage home ownership for all the benefits that ownership has with it. Lots of studies about, you know, crime rates go down when ownership is up, higher educational attainment for children who grow up in that a stable home, in part because a home is fixed. People don't tend to move out of them as much as they do rentals, where they may move schools, school districts, those types of things. So this is just one of the tools that I don't think people know about.
No.
It's been around since 1991, and this will probably shock you that there have been over 7,000 certificates that have been issued.
How many?
Over 7,000 since 1991.
Wow.
And it's something last year we did just 24 of them. And this year we are already surpassed that. We have 40 that have been approved, and we're hoping even more. There's no reason that anybody who qualifies for this program shouldn't use it. We have great partners in our lenders and real estate agents. We try to educate them because they can often tell somebody who doesn't know about it. And what we say is that if you're with a lender who hasn't heard about it, you need to have that lender call us, because we will educate them on what it is. If they're not willing to use it, we have a whole list of lenders, and we don't recommend one over another, but we can tell you all the lenders that have done mortgage credit certificates in the past year. We keep all those statistics. If you watch our Facebook, we thank them every time a mortgage credit certificate is issued, because we know the lenders are doing work on behalf of their homeowners, and we think that's a great service that they're doing for our community. And so we try to appreciate them and let them know just that they're an important part of this.
Absolutely.
We're not doing it on our own by any means.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's also opening up a larger audience to sell to if you're a realtor or a lender as well, because, you know, when we talk about affordable housing, I get a little frustrated, not in like a real way, but just like in a caring way, that we talk that affordable housing, well, if you just make less than $30,000 or $35,000 a year and your housing costs burdened, that's affordable housing. No, if you, like, you mentioned the numbers, if you're making sometimes less than $60,000 or $70,000 a year, you're getting kicked in the teeth right now when it comes to buying a home without some of these resources. It's amazing when you look at the numbers and we talk about accessible housing, housing that you can get into. If you are moderate paid individual or home, it's really hard right now to get into housing. It really is. And we don't talk about that because our focus is often on the lower income side, but lower and moderate income both need help right now.
I think that's a really good point. One of the things, I worked in public housing in my early days of my career. I worked at Habitat for Humanity Tucson for 8 years. And one of the things that can occasionally be frustrating, and there are regulations that come down from the federal government, so I don't blame local jurisdictions, but some of the funding, it's for 80% of area median income and below. Our area median income here for a family of four is roughly $64,000. And so it's in the 40s range that you would have to make under. But if you're if you make a dollar over 80% area median income, you get no help. So it's this hard drop off, and it's always left people from 80 to 125% to 150% of the area median income who are equally in need of home ownership. And that's the way I used to talk about it, is somebody without a home, somebody who's at 30% of area median income is no more needy of home ownership than somebody at 120% of area median income who doesn't have it and can't afford it.
Yep.
They're in equal need of that, of home ownership. And so I love some of the programs that we have. Another one is Pima Tucson Homebuyer Solutions Program that helps a more moderate income buyer as well. The other thing that's great about the mortgage credit certificate, it can be layered in with any other affordable housing down payment assistance programs.
That's good.
If you're in this business, and I've been in it for a while, there's often times where you can have one subsidy, but you can't have another. You can use one program,
right,
but you can't use
right.
another on
you
top of
layer it.
Yep. But MCCs can be layered on top of any other type of down payment assistance somebody might be looking for. So in that way, it should be more widely used than it is. It's really, I mean, I hate to say things like it's free money, because people are like, nothing's free. Legitimately, this is money that's just being left on the table. If you qualify for it, there is no reason, if your house is under the, you know, meets the qualifications and your income meets these qualifications and you're buying a home, there isn't any reason that you should not have this tax benefit.
Right. Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. We have a couple other things to get to. So this is, if you're listening, we're not closing out the conversation, but if you were listening to this and it is something that applies to you, take advantage of it. Give us that website one more time as a next step to reach out.
Sure. It's cictucson.com or .org, either one.
Yeah. Over the last couple of quarters, the average non-new, I can't remember the technical term, non-new home sale price, right? So it's not a home that's a new build, was $250,000. If you were buying a new home, the average sale price in Tucson, right, was $300,000 plus. So this is a relevant conversation to have. We're going to spin away to our sponsors. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a related topic, and that is it often seems to me that when we talk about housing in our communities, that there's kind of a not in my backyard spin to it, rather than a real community interest in seeing housing either renovated or put in that is going to help the community as a whole. And there's a new movement starting to happen called YIMBY. And I've had a chat with some friends that maybe the right answer is more in MIMBY, maybe in my backyard,
sure.
Right? Not just no out of hand, not just yes out of hand, build everything, build new things, but more of a critical approach of seeing housing and housing stock as a way to balance the ecosystem so that housing is easier to stay in if you already have housing or to get into if you're looking to buy for the first time. These are issues that the Community Investment Corporation deals with every day. I want to talk about that. And then also about your part of the startup ecosystem, helping businesses and entrepreneurs get the funding they need to get started. Let's go to a break and we'll get into that on the other side with Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation here in Tucson. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show. You are on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk with my guest in studio today, Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation that works on a few specific but high impact themes in our community. We were talking about a special program called the MCC in the last hour, or not the last hour, the last 30 minutes. It did not feel like an hour. It went way too fast. If you missed any of that, definitely go back and listen to the podcast at kvoi.com /podcast. It's the Mortgage Credit Certificate Program to help home buyers finance their first home purchase or their first home purchase in 3 years, which I think is a really great distinction there. While I had Danny Nee in the studio, I wanted to also talk about a couple other themes that they're involved with. One is a interesting topic we'll land on just briefly, and then we'll close out by talking about how the Community Investment Corporation is a part of the startup and entrepreneurial environment and ecosystem in Tucson. But we've heard a little bit, I think, about NIMBYism. Not to get into isms too hard, because I think there's problems with, you know, isms as well. But there's often in cities and communities this feel of not in my backyard. You know, it's like, yes, it'd be great to have more jobs, more housing, more people, but just not in my backyard. And often a, you know, private home ownership has actually driven this a lot in the U.S. the last 50, 60 years of just an unintentional restricting of often housing supply and homes and the opportunity for newer generations to get into housing. And then when we see that regulation of housing, then the supply doesn't meet demand. And so that's when you see housing prices going up, which increases property values, which makes it harder to get into. So it's kind of this weird math that we don't often talk about. Well, there's a new ism now. I just want to get kind of an overview from Danny Nee, and that's called YIMBY, which is yes in my backyard. And it's actually, as I've been looking at it, a movement of individuals and even some policymakers and such to say, look, when we look at our city, we need to be saying yes more to specific housing development. And we don't want to necessarily restrict our urban growth limits per se, or we don't want to necessarily restrict our infill, that we want to be more open to some of this densification that keeps costs low, that keeps people in their homes, that allows home buying to be a little bit more easy. Is that what your sense has been of the kind of YIMBY response to NIMBYism, or what am I missing? I'd love for you to flesh that out a little bit more for us.
So I think it is a complex idea that's being simplified down to, you know, an acronym.
Sure.
But, you know, NIMBYism first started with, it has a very dark history in terms of redlining that occurred and
that's a great point.
In neighborhoods. You know, it was back when, you know, people of color could, you
right.
know, white people did not want people of color moving into their neighborhoods.
And read up on Chicago in the 80s. It's dark.
Absolutely. And obviously it goes back even further than that. But this idea of YIMBY is understanding, especially in places where, take a Tucson, for instance, with the revitalization of downtown, and there are more opportunities that are occurring here, and opportunities make this a more attractive place to to move. You have upward pressure on prices, makes things less affordable. It's also that idea of once somebody, you know, buys a home, that's often their biggest investment that they have. So they're very conscious about what the value of that home is, because much of their personal wealth may be, sure, may be tied up in it. And so it sort of pits what's good for a community against what might be good for an individual. And I think the good thing about, and again, working with Habitat for Humanity for the years I did in affordable housing, that was part of what we had to deal with. People saying to us occasionally, you know, when we wanted to build a Habitat community, they'd be like, no, well, we don't want, it was basically a proxy for, we don't want poor people around us. They're going to reduce our house values and those types of things. And it was always interesting to me, because sometimes people had that argument even when they had no legal right to it. When we had purchased the land ourselves and right, we had the right to build on it, just the way any private person could, you know, get something. We weren't asking for rezoning or anything like that, but that's sort of the dark side of NIMBY. And we used to talk about, how do we get to YIMBY? How do we get to yes in my backyard? And it's, I think one of the things that's important about it is really getting a better idea of, you know, who your neighbors are. We think in these big terms of, you know, low-income housing, and that comes up with a picture in people's mind that, again, I've done this for 20 years. I don't think it's accurate. I can say, because I've been next to the people, the neighbors who are buying homes, and it's not what people think, in terms of, they think there's going to be more crime, and these biases, I think, that are some implicit biases that are involved in NIMBYism. So YIMBY, I think, is... it's a good thing on a sort of a social, it's socially good in that we need to provide affordable places for everybody to live in a community, because that's how a community thrives. Not everybody makes $100,000 or $500,000. Not everybody makes $20,000. You have a whole range of incomes. It means that you need a range of housing. One of the things that's really difficult, I think, that happens, and there was a study that came out, Family Housing Resources, one of our sister organizations, did this a few years back, but it was a study on affordable housing. And the interesting part is that while there may be close to enough affordable units in Tucson, there's a mismatch of people who are renting or purchasing those affordable units, because just because something is less expensive doesn't mean somebody who wants to make more money can't go and buy it. And I'm not suggesting that we should restrict that, but we have to understand that that's a part of this. So providing more units with more options, YIMBY gets into that idea of, yes, you know, a place like San Francisco, for instance, which is where I grew up, they're dealing with a bigger economic problem. They need more housing because they need the pressure on the housing market and the prices, right, to come down. Tucson isn't quite there yet, but I do think you need to get out ahead of it. You need to understand that we do, and also, by the way, density, urban planning background, density is good for commerce. It's you know, the more people you have in an area, it's easier to support businesses in those areas. So I'm generally like a little bit of a higher density, you know, appropriate higher density type of person, because I think it, public transit works better. There are all these things, but you had said at the beginning, it's sort of a very difficult, you know, equation to figure out, because you pull in one place and something, you know, unintended consequences occur. But I'm glad there is a discussion about YIMBYism now, because I think it is important for us to understand again that diversity in our economy is incredibly important. I think it's what actually sustains cities through good and bad times. And you know, we can oversimplify and say, if you look in the Rust Belt, you know, they were too dependent on a single sort of industry, and that's what, you know, what happened up in Detroit and those types of things. Having a diversity in the economy is important, and that means you also have to have diversity in housing. I think it's interesting because it's sort of an economically progressive idea, YIMBYism, at the same time as being pro-development, which people don't always see. When you oversimplify things, people don't always see it that way, but it is it's this sort of pro-development movement, and it provides an opportunity really for business and people who want social equality as well, social and economic equality as well, to work together. And I'm not sure that that's always the two groups that have, you know, hung out drinking beers together.
100%. And we need more of that bridge building being done. And I think it's weird when you throw words like pro development, or it's progressive. It's like, well, pro development as anti-people, or pro-people as anti-development. And the question that's not asked is how do we work together for community benefit? And I'm fascinated by the initiatives right now in the city to tackle displacement, or tackle gentrification, or tackle housing affordability. And developers and neighbors are not in the room together on purpose. And I'm not, and this is in no way me calling anybody out at all, of just saying like these conversations are happening in silos because there's not enough of these bridge building conversations happening. And maybe I'm just on my stump, because this is what I want to be in the conversation, is a bridge,
right?
You know, because I'm a neighbor and I'm a resident, but I also see the clouds looming. And as a young professional, I have concerns for what the future looks like, because I got into my neighborhood when I could afford it. If I tried to move into my neighborhood now, forget about it. So I want the senior who's scared about staying in her home, and the young person who wants to live where they work and to be in a community they want to be in, to have a neighborhood choice. I care about both ends of the spectrum, and to have that conversation means, I think, that you get development in the room, you get government in the room, you get neighbors in the room, and you have a conversation of how do we move forward together, because all three of those groups don't realize that they need the other yet in Tucson. Or they realize that need and they don't want to be in the same room. Still a problem either way.
Right. I think you've hit it on the head. I think I hopefully see our organization as something similar. We're in the nonprofit realm, but we're, you know, a lot of what we deal with is finance and economics. And again, we believe in the power of the market. We try to bridge that idea of the getting businesses, whether it's development or otherwise, government, nonprofits into the room to come up with solutions together. I live in the Garden District. A little shout out for my little district over by Columbus and Grant, and it's considered not a great neighborhood by a lot of people. It's funny in the nonprofit world where people talk about neighborhoods, and I can say, well, that's actually where I live. Like my wife and I love where we live. We love the opportunity that we have to build our lives there. Again, we are not having the nuanced conversations that I think we need to have. I think there is a little bit at times too much sort of ideology, where there's a single thing that will shut down an entire conversation. And, that idea yes. of just negotiate, you know, coming to a more negotiated outcome that right. has more wins to it, I feel like we've lost some of that in the public dialogue and discourse. And when you talk about the idea of, you know, what do we do with gentrification and those types of things? You know, there are cooperative movements that are moving forward right now for cooperative ownership. It can be of housing. It can be of businesses. The Community Food Bank, which I think is great. Michael McDonald is a very, he's a great director and very innovative, where the Community Food Bank is looking at cooperatives. And one of the things which people don't always understand, and I've talked about before in different venues, is Arizona is not really set up to assist people in starting cooperatives. We're in an ownership society. I think a lot of wealth is based on ownership in our society. People can reject that, that's fine, but I think that's where we're at. And trying to find more ways for more people to have ownership seems like a good thing to do. We have to get the legislation in place. We have to get the expertise. There's somebody here, the Technicians for Sustainability, a solar provider. They're cooperatively owned. And what's interesting is that they were incorporated out of Colorado because it was easier to do in Colorado, even though they've never done business there, to do that. And they now get their accounting out of Wisconsin because that's a state that that's where they know how to do that sort of accounting. These are ideas that are coming sort of if the grassroots up. People are saying, we want these things. And I think the dialogue needs to be, how do we facilitate it? And that maybe is a little bit of an aside, but it does have to do with that conversation of, again, bringing sides together. I don't know who's against people having more ownership if that's what they choose to have. We should be looking at more opportunities to do that. Cooperatives are one way. It's not a silver bullet. I'm not at all going to suggest that. But for a group of people who want to get into that sort of organization, shouldn't we grease the wheels a little bit to make that an easier process to do? Because then more people will have a stake, whether it's in a neighborhood or in their workplace, those types of things. We are passionate about that at CIC.
So good. That's why we have these conversations, because I think groups like CIC are important to having these conversations and be translators. I think on accident, community advocates don't know how to translate to government and development and vice versa. And I'm in between those conversations all the time. And I just scratch my head and go, man, that conversation literally blew up in the first 30 seconds and nobody realizes that it happened.
Sure.
Everyone around the table is good people who like care for each other. And it's like, whew, we need to develop lexicons for these conversations. And I know that's part of the work that you do at CIC. Let's go to our last break, because we have one more thing we want to get to before we head to the Bill Buckmaster show here on 1030 The Voice. And that is the role of the CIC in the startup and business starting community. Love to hear more about that when we come back from the break here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to my conversation, my quickly closing in on the end conversation with Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation here in Tucson. If you missed any part of the last hour, we don't have time to recap it, but it was a rich conversation that highlights what CIC does. And we're talking about housing and mortgages and micro lending and many different ways that this organization invests in people in Tucson. We got about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to hit on with Danny Nee the value that your organization brings to the startup ecosystem in terms of funding and financing. What are you guys doing on that front that maybe we don't know about?
So we're really focused on the micro finance side currently, and it's one of the things I think in the startup world, we always think of startups, and these days it's about tech startup and scalable startups. Right. And again, don't get me wrong, we need that. That's great, wonderful economic development, great innovation that comes out of it. I would just always warn people not to forget all the innovation that comes at a smaller scale than that, and including innovation that happens at mom and pop shops. Also in Tucson, because I think people from Tucson. The culture here is so strong. I'm very proud. I'm a transplant, but very proud of what Tucson has going on culturally, with whether it's food or, you know, the mountains, the outdoors, all the wonderful things that we have here. And we need to support those who need a little money to start up, as well as those who have the, you know, the new sea change idea. As I say, yes, we're just enamored of the lightning strike of
the unicorn.
Yeah, the shark tankification, which I say of you know, businesses, you know, getting this huge investment, and really a lot of investments of $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 to start a business. Is a place that I think is underserved. So we've been working with groups like Startup Tucson, awesome group here in town. We're working with Go for Vertical. They're actually a tech startup, Edward Cruz. And one of the things that they're looking at is how do we start up businesses with a much lower upfront of investment? And so that's one of the places we've been working, is to try to provide, if you can imagine, some sort of, if it was steps, and your steps are, you know, a foot tall, or your steps are 5 feet tall, mm-hmm. in between each step. Right now, I think part of the problem is at the lower end, that first step for people, that step is like 20 feet tall. You know, you need a grappling hook to get up it. And what we want to do is we want to make those steps smaller. So what we're going to help, and what we are going to incubate, is different than what a VC or angel investor is going to. We're hopefully going to create a pipeline for those investors. And right now that doesn't really exist. I'm not going to say nobody does it, but I don't think it's not sort of institutionalized in any way here. That ecosystem is not built out. And so we're spending time in collaboration with groups like the McGuire Center over at the U of A, Rick Invey. We are with the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, with the Community Food Bank, groups that want to see this ecosystem built out. And really what it is, it's about offering lower dollar amounts. And in that way, there's actually less risk in being able to do that. We're getting groups that are vetting these businesses, so they're going through business training and then coming to us ready for that initial smaller investment. They may, you know, may not be ready for the big investment yet. The other piece that's missing, I think, is micro equity. So loans are not always the way to start a business. A lot of times when we talk about loans, they can be friends and family kind of loans, so people aren't actually paying them back right away. And so there can be these partnerships in equity, and we're working with a group called WeFunder out of San Francisco. It's crowdsourcing. And the idea is they're working with us to get a localized platform here where it'll be Tucson-based. If you wanted to invest in a Tucson business, you could go to their platform. But basically getting an infusion of capital that way, and where people, you have to share ownership, but if that's what you need to start up, as low as $10,000. So that's, we think, cool. this space is pretty cool and ripe for, you know, building out.
That's awesome. I agree. Missing element. Oh man, Danny Nee, executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. We did an hour together and it still feels like we rushed through it, which is unbelievable to me, but we'll do this again. I would love to see this as a more regular conversation. Thank you for the gaps that you're filling in our community and making sure that our development and growth as a community reaches more and more people, which is a always growing cycle if we do it right. So thank you for what you're doing. Your website, one more time.
It is cictucson.com or .org.
Perfect. Well, that takes us to the end of our hour, but not the end of live local news and talk and listening here on 1030 The Voice. Bill Buckmaster steps into studio any second now, and Councilmember Steve Kozacik will be calling in for a conversation with Bill. So spend your 12 o'clock hour right here with us. We'll be back tomorrow. We're talking streetcar tomorrow with Amber from the Chamber of Commerce. The Creative City Show. We'll see you tomorrow.